South Asia Wired, regional stories with an international touch and international news that touches the region. Hosted by Dira Sujan.
Hello and welcome to South Asia Wired. Like most complex and seemingly intractable conflicts, Kashmir has become to most ordinary people an implacable mystery. Kashmir has been fought over by India, Pakistan, and to a lesser-known extent, China, since the partition of 1947 that divided the subcontinent. Since then, innumerable splinter groups, often backed by outside parties, have negotiated ceasefires, broken them, come to the peace table, or stalked off. The majority of Kashmiris call for independence, but it's clear that neither India nor Pakistan are ready to make any big concessions. The conflict intensified 20 years ago when Pakistani-funded militants drove out the majority of Hindus from the Muslim-dominated valley. A couple of years ago, it looked like peace talks were finally having some effect. But then, a couple of months ago, the old wounds flared up again. Young protesters have taken to the streets, often throwing stones at the large numbers of security forces deployed around the valley. The police and army have declared curfews that have all but shut down the region, crippling local businesses, but having little effect in stopping the protests. I met Amitabh Mattoo, a Hindu Kashmiri and professor of international relations at Delhi's Jawaharlal Nehru University. He also happens to be involved in the current rounds of peace talks between Delhi and Srinagar. I wanted his insider's take on the underlying causes of the current violence that's taking such a deadly toll in Kashmir.
It's really a new generation of young Kashmiris who for the last 20 years have seen just conflict, violence, presence, often overwhelming of security forces, and often are unemployed, many of them unemployable because they're uneducated. So there's a sense of hopelessness, a sense of great frustration, alienation, angst, and that in the context of Kashmir translates into protests against India, protests against the state government. And what is also happening is there is this radicalization of young people through the internet, through the cyber world. Sometimes it's a radicalization which is taking a religious form. Often enough, it's also taking away anti-India form. So it's a variety of reasons which have contributed to making many of the young Kashmiris angry, frustrated, alienated, often indoctrinated, and it's still taking the shape of a civil disobedience movement. People are there with only stones, unlike in the 90s when you had a militancy, armed militancy, which had been aided and abetted by Pakistan. This is still a resistance movement which is by and large non-violent.
So how's this generation different from other Kashmiri generations who also fought against what they call the Indian occupation?
You know, if you go back to 47 and you look at the 63 years of Kashmir's history, you've had periods of tension, you've had periods of great anxiety, but frankly speaking, there's no period which can compare to the last 20 years. This was a period in which you had acts of terrorism, in which you had a full-blown militant insurgency, in which Pakistan was directly involved as well. So anyone who grew up in Kashmir during these years grew up in the most traumatic, most violent of conditions, and often just the only way of remaining secure and safe was being sequestered in your own home without often there being any electricity or anything to do. So I just imagine what these 20 years could have done to people who were born or who grew up or who were in their formative years. And that explains what's happening in the streets of the valley today.
You've written about something you call the Kashmiri sense of victimhood. Is it justified? And how do the Indians perceive that sense of victimhood?
Yeah, you know, it's finally about perceptions. I think the average Kashmiri feels that justice has not been done to him historically in terms of politics, in terms of the erosion of autonomy. So there is that sense of injustice. I think the rest of Indians feel that the Kashmiris have been pampered, that far too much by way of economic subsidies, by way of economic packages, by way of recognizing their special rights has been done. I think what you need to do is explain to the rest of India that there are some genuine concerns that the Kashmiris have about the erosion of their autonomy linked to what they feel is their special identity. And the Kashmiris need to be also told that, look, it's going to be a tough balance between the aspirations of the Kashmiris and what the rest of India thinks. I think there is need for educating the Kashmiris and there's need for educating the rest of India as well before you can do anything significant.
Can you tell me a little bit about the economic packages that Kashmir gets from the central government?
Kashmir is one of those states where 90% of all development assistance comes from the government of India, which means that Kashmir only spends 10% from its own revenues towards its development. Kashmir has the largest number of employees employed by the government, which is almost 10% to 15% of the total population of the state. And the revenues that Kashmir is able to generate are not really even enough to pay for the salaries of its employees.
Kashmir has always been very economically successful. One doesn't get a sense of grinding poverty in Kashmir as you do in other parts of India.
In the Human Development Index or in terms of per capita income, the ordinary Kashmir is far better off than many of his counterparts. The state of Jammu and Kashmir is extremely poor because often people don't pay taxes. It's not thought of imaginative ways of generating revenues. So the state is poor. The people are not in an economic sense, but the expectations are sky high. You might, with the same degree of lack of governance, with the same degree of lack of attention in Bihar or Uttar Pradesh, you may not have had an uprising or a revolt. But Kashmiris, for historical reasons and for the fact that they are politically very conscious, their expectations are higher. And if those expectations are not fulfilled, then you see what's happening.
I don't know if the Assad world actually feels that there is any movement going on between the peace talks. You're involved in the talks yourself. What do you see from the inside?
You know, Jammu and Kashmir is so complex. The problems are so enmeshed in history, in the whole idea of India and the whole idea of Pakistan. For India, the accession of Jammu and Kashmir was an endorsement of its idea of secularism, because Jammu and Kashmir was a Muslim-majority state. And Pakistan believed that Hindus and Muslims couldn't coexist, so it wanted Kashmir to demonstrate that by not remaining with India. Having said that, there have been periodic attempts at understanding or resolving this issue. And most recently, Prime Minister Manmohan Singh and President Musharraf had a series of talks, and they almost arrived at a modus vivendi. In other words, you cannot change borders. So the idea was that there would be the border between the two Jammu and Kashmirs on the Indian side and the Pakistani side would be softened so that people could go back and forth. Simultaneously, there would be political space given to both sides of Kashmir. Unfortunately, Musharraf didn't last long enough. And now we're back to square one. Pakistan is caught in its own internal turmoil, and India-Pakistan relations since the attacks in Mumbai 2 years ago have reached an all-time low, despite attempts at revitalizing them. In short, we are nowhere near a resolution of Jammu and Kashmir today than we were 63 years ago.
Do you feel that it's true what the newspapers are saying, that the stones are working when the bullets didn't? The stones of the 2010 of this time are working when the bullets of the 90s didn't?
You know, as a form of resistance in the 21st century, if you have a relatively non-violent or you're armed with stones, that has a much greater impact. If you have guns, then state use of force is justified. But here, state use of force is not justified because you have young people with just stones.
You were born in the 60s. Your daughters are from the same generation as these protesters. Personally, what do you think? Do you think Kashmir will be resolved in your lifetime, in theirs, or not at all?
I wish I was a crystal gazer. I wish I could forecast the future. But there's no doubt that I've do hope that, forget about just a lifetime, I just hope that within this decade we arrive at some form of settlement, honourable settlement of Jammu and Kashmir.
Professor Amitabh Mattu talking to me in Delhi. Remember, you can find out more about this story and more on our website. Just type in South Asia Wired on your search engine or check us out on Facebook or, of course, the Radio Netherlands homepage. I hope you'll join me next week for South Asia Wired. Till then, keep well.
You've been listening to South Asia Wired, hosted by Dira Sujan. This has been a Radio Netherlands Worldwide presentation.